The holidays are all about sharing with family. Meals, couches, stories, grandma's secret pecan pie recipe. And now, you can also share a cart with Instacart's family carts. Everyone can add what they want to one group cart from wherever they are. So you don't have to go from room to room to find out who wants cranberry sauce, or who should get mini marshmallows for the yams, or collecting votes for sugar cookies versus shortbread. Just share a cart and then share the meals and the moments. Download the Instacart app and get delivery in as fast as 30 minutes. Plus, enjoy free delivery on your first three orders. Service fees and terms apply.
Whatever the adventure, there's a BMW engineered to take it on. The X3 delivers a striking design with agile performance. The 100% electric i4 packed with pure electric energy. Or the plug-in hybrid X5, an impressive, versatile SUV granting full control on every journey. Choose what powers your next adventure during the BMW Road Home Sales Event. BMW, the ultimate driving machine. Hurry in for exceptional offers through January 2nd. Visit BMWUSA.com for details.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance too with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
Welcome back to Grant and Danny on the Fan. We are in New Orleans getting ready for the Commanders and the Saints. Thanks much for making the show part of your day. We are live in the French Quarter. Show is brought to you today and every day by our friends, the law firm Kondori & Murat.
As Washington continues to build a foundation of success on and off the field this season, it's time for you, yes, you, to plan for your future as well. As the exclusive sponsor of our show, the law firm of Kondori & Murat can help you update your last will and testament or set up a revocable trust for you and your family. Schedule a free consultation with their estate planning attorneys today by visiting kmlawyers.com and be sure to tell them that Grant and Danny sent you. That's kmlawyers.com.
Let's talk to Jeff Nowak, who is the digital sports producer and Saints sideline reporter, Odyssey in Nolens, where we are broadcasting live. Jeff, it's good to have you back on the show. It's Grant and Danny here on The Fan. How are you?
I'm doing good, but I will tell you in advance, no one here says Nolens. That's just important information that I need you to know.
You guys don't have to. You don't have to.
All right.
I'm going to eat beignets, and I'm going to say Nolens. Yeah. I'm going to tell you what, here's what's at stake.
Enough.
If you guys beat Washington, I will not say Nolens anymore. How about that?
All right. Good deal. I'll take it.
Good. Is that work? Tell us about Jake Haener. We just listened to his press conference, and it was pretty awesome. I mean, him talking like he is ready to prove to the world that they just don't know who he is. There's something very cool about that.
No, I like Jake. I think Jake has kind of been, the under-the-radar guy with the Saints in the Saints quarterback room this year, just because, they drafted Spencer Rattler, and then Spencer obviously has a much higher profile. But don't forget, Jake was a fourth-round pick last year. It wasn't kind of like a nothing pick. They traded up to get him. They liked Jake. It was obviously a different regime. So anytime you're drafted and then they change the entire offense around you, it's not going to bode well for your, their intents for you. But he played well in training camp. He kept that job. And, when Derek went down in week six, I think it was fair to wonder, okay, are they going to go with Spencer? Are they going to go with Jake? Jake has been the backup every game this season. And they ended up going with Spencer. I don't know if that went the way they had hoped. Spencer's a rookie. The stat that stands out to me, you look at the Saints season at large, and in the games Derek Carr started, they allowed 8 sacks, which is the lowest number in the NFL. In the 3 games Derek was out, they allowed 16 sacks. And,
wow.
That doesn't happen by accident, and because this is not the best pass blocking offensive line in football. That's what the sacks number might be hinting at. It's not that. It is an offense that has been very good at getting the ball out of the quarterback's hands. And when I asked him about it today, that's basically what he said. He's like, you got to process quickly. You got to get the ball out. And that's what I think Jake is going to be able to do at a higher level than maybe Spencer was at this point in his career. But no, Jake's a confident guy. I think he's eager to go out there and show something because, even if he is not the future for quarterback for the Saints, this is his opportunity to go out there and show some other teams that maybe, hey, you're going to be looking around for quarterback, backup quarterback next year, and I want that to be me.
So just thinking of those sack totals, Jeff, I mean, they did play Denver and the Chargers, two pretty darn good defenses in there. But just sort of thinking about that, and I would love for you to address that, number one, but then number two, is the higher ceiling player still Spencer Rattler in your mind? I mean, we know him from that quarterback show, and then his pedigree as a highly touted recruit at multiple schools over the course of his college career, as he was in school for like a million years, which is kind of the new norm now. But do you still think, or do people still view him as maybe the higher ceiling guy, but this is Haener for now, or where are we there?
Yeah, I mean, Spencer, a lot of people in the building definitely see Spencer as a potential starting quarterback in the NFL down the line. If you were just to stand Jake and Spencer next to each other and said, make this throw, make this throw, make this throw, there's no question that Spencer has the elite arm talent. That's why Spencer was at one point looked at as a potential number one overall pick. Like, I'm not making that up. That's actually what people were saying early on during his stint at Oklahoma. And then he obviously got surpassed by Caleb Williams, who did end up being a number one overall pick. But that's the difference, is I think Spencer has that elite arm talent that, you know, people kind of fawn over. Whereas Jake is kind of just a guy that does his job. He's not going to wow you with his arm, but I think he does process at a higher level at this point. He's in year two. It's not a huge difference. He doesn't have the starts under his belt, but he has gotten into multiple games this year. So now, I think there's people in the building that like both of these guys, and I think they feel like they're in a pretty solid young quarterback scenario where they want to develop both of these players. They're not out on Spencer Rattler because they went with Jake. They weren't out on Jake when they went with Spencer Rattler earlier this season. And I think, you know, there is a part of this that you look at it and you say, this is a difficult situation. We're putting a young quarterback in a difficult situation this week. And then you look at next week, they're going up to Green Bay. They're going to have to play in whatever weather they have on December 23rd in, you know, Wisconsin. So, you know, I do think there might be a level of, hey, we're going to protect Spencer right now and maybe down the line late in the year where these games might not really mean anything and you have some easier matchup, particularly week 17. You're talking about the Raiders and the Bucks. You know, maybe you turn back to them then, but they're not giving up on either guy.
How about weapons around him? You know, it's so easy to sit here and say, oh, well, maybe he'll come out and play well, or, you know, he's going to stink because he's a fourth-round pick and he's not a starter and all these things. I mean, it's a dependent position. So if you get some help, you can look pretty good. If you don't, you're going to look pretty bad. And, man, are they banged up. It does sound like all systems are go for Alvin Kamara, though.
Yeah, Alvin is dealing with it. He was dealing with an illness this week. He missed 2 days of practice, but he was back out there today. He was a full participant. Darren Rizzi said it was more just precautionary. He was pretty sick, and they didn't want to have him force anything yesterday. He'll be a full go, and that's important because, like you mentioned, you know, you don't have a lot of weapons. There's no Chris Olave. There's no Rashid Shaheed. Marquez Valdez-Scantling, who's a player that, you know, wasn't here until week 8, is probably your top target. Kevin Austin Jr. is a UDFA, a rookie who came out of actually, he's not a rookie. I take that back. Just first year playing in the NFL. He started with the Jaguars and then went to the UFL, played with the Birmingham Stallions. He's been kind of a revelation a little bit in the last few weeks. He's worked really hard. He's been called up. But these are the players you're working with. I do expect to see the tight ends get a little more involved. If you go back and watch that Chargers game where Jake got in after Spencer was benched in the third quarter, he was kind of peppering Jawan Johnson up the seam with targets. And I wouldn't be surprised if you see him do that again. But the thing I think you're going to see with Jake, and this is kind of goes back to that sack number, is you're going to see him try to get the ball out quickly, right? You're going to see him try to get the ball to the edges of the field, get the ball into playmakers' hands so they can catch, run, and do something. And I think that his baseline is going to be a little higher. I think he gives you a better chance to win this game than maybe Spencer would, and it's because of that. It's because I think he's going to be able to process quickly, understand what he's looking at, and make the quick decision, the right decision. But there's no question. You look at the Saints offense, and there's not a lot of teeth there.
Jeff Nowak with us here on G&D, breaking down the Saints. Just a quick Kamara question for my own sort of purposes. I think he's somehow underrated, just historically. He's never been maybe like the number one or number two back in the NFL, maybe in some people's minds, but and you don't have the 1,000 rushing yard seasons, but he's a different kind of player. He's put together an unbelievable career, and he's still doing it, even at 29 years old. You know, it's not that Derrick Henry bruising style. It's not, you know, maybe the single most explosive type thing, but you look at some of the yardage totals. He had an 18 touchdown season, a 21 total touchdown season. Has been close to double digits several times, even since what you thought would have been his prime. An unbelievably good player that I feel like somehow doesn't get enough credit. Just give me your thoughts there.
Yeah, the amazing thing about Alvin is he's never had a 1,000-yard rushing season, and he's actually on the verge of doing that for the first time this year. I think he needs 62 yards to get there, and because it's the Saints franchise rushing leader. He's never had a 1,000-yard season. And I think that when you say underrated, I think the reason for that is he's never been that kind of blow up 2,000-yard whatever guy, but he's just been this very consistent weapon who can affect the game in so many different ways. He kind of reminds me of Le'Veon Bell. If you go back to Le'Veon Bell, one of the things that he stood out with him is he's never running full speed. He probably runs full speed like 10% of the time. But he's always kind of feeling out blocks, finding gaps, and making positive plays. You know, one thing that I think the Saints have gotten away from in the last few years that made Alvin special was the screen game. You know, I feel like when Drew Brees was here, it was at least once a game, Alvin would get the ball in space and break off 20, 30-yard gain. And you just haven't seen the Saints get to that as much. They have been better about it this year. But, you know, the consistency with Alvin, you know, he's 29 years old. There's been the question, oh, is he going to drop off? You know, I don't think it has been that over the last 2 years going into this year. It's just been the offense hasn't been supporting him, and you see him now in a scheme that supports him a little better in terms of what he does well at that Kyle Shanahan, Kubiak scheme that, you know, is everywhere in the NFL now, and he fits it really well. So I think, you know, who knows what's going to be what the coaching staff is going to look like on the Saints beyond this season. But I think what he showed this year in particular is he's still got several years of quality football ahead. And I don't know where they would be. They would be in real trouble this season if they didn't have him out there.
Great insight from Jeff Nowak. Covers the Saints in New Orleans with us here on Grant and Danny. We're broadcasting live from the French Quarter. We will be here all weekend leading up to Sunday's kick against the Saints at 1 o'clock back home and at noon local at the Superdome. Let's shift over to the defensive side of the ball. You know, for years, Jeff, and you know this better than I do, you know, the Saints were really stout defensively. Like, you knew you were going to get a really good defensive effort when you played them. They are ranked 31st defensively this year in yards per play, and they are dead last against the run. I mean, it feels to me like this is actually a really great matchup for what Washington likes to do, which is run the ball down teams' throats with Brian Robinson. They give up 5.04 a pop. Have they actually been that bad against the run, or are the numbers misleading?
Oh, that's exactly what they've been. The numbers are not misleading at all. The funny thing is you say, hey, the Saints have this reputation of being a really stout defense. It's funny because that only goes back a few years. If you go back to like 2016, they were the worst defense in football before Dennis Allen got here. So,
that's a good point.
That
was like the Drew Brees Saints for years with Peyton.
Exactly.
They were awful defensively and elite offensively.
Where the Bengals are right now. The Saints were the Bengals like 8 years ago, right?
That's a great call,
Joe Burrow's going through the same thing. But, you know, so over the last few years, you know, they went like 3 years without allowing a 100-yard rusher. Like, that was kind of what they said, what they did to set themselves apart is, like, they stopped the run, they manned up on the outside, and they forced you to try to beat them over the middle of the field, and most teams couldn't. And, you know, that's really what's gone away over the last couple of years. They moved on from David Onyemata and Shai Tuttle last year. They replaced him with Nathan Shepard, Colin Saunders, some of these other guys. You know, they drafted Brian Brzee. You thought, hey, this is going to be the new group in that middle. And they just they get moved off the ball. You know, and that's what you'll see when the Commanders are trying to run the ball in the middle of the field, that the Saints' interior defensive line just gets moved 3, 4, 5 yards down the field way too much. And that's like, I think the number to look at more so than just the rushing yards is, you know, yards before contact, which is insanely high this year for the Saints. And it's been a problem. They've had some games where they did better. They stopped up the run against the Browns. They played well against the run last week. I think they held the Giants running backs to 53 yards, 2.9 yards per carry. But, you know, they've also struggled against mobile quarterbacks. And I don't think they're going to be able to cover both. So that's what I said earlier this week was like, I think they'll be able to stop one of Jaden Daniels or Brian Robinson from running. I just don't think they'll be able to stop both of them. I think one of those guys is going to have a big day, and it's just going to be kind of a question of who. But the defense, you know, they've had some really rough games, but then they've had some solid games. You know, DeMario Davis is still playing really well. You've lost both your starting cornerbacks, but I think Alante Taylor and Kool-Aid McKinstry on the outside have played well. Kool-Aid's been a little susceptible to some big plays over the top. He's benefited from some receivers dropping the ball the last couple weeks. But he's a rookie, so you kind of look at that and say, hey, they're going to attack him. How can he make plays? But no, the defense has definitely been disappointing. And you look at a group that was led by Dennis Allen, right? Like, he's the one who kind of turned this defense around when he took over in 2017. He's gone now. Joe Woods is calling the defensive plays. And there's been a little frustration in terms of how the defense has been called. I talked to Tyrann Mathieu about this earlier in the week, and there was a point against the Giants where they got down to the goal line. He came off the field, slammed his helmet down, and yelled, like, "You're calling plays like I'm not even effing out here." It was funny because it was a quote that on Twitter got attributed to Malik Nabers initially, and then he like quote tweeted and said, "No, that was me." And he's yelling at his own defensive coordinator saying, "Hey, you know, why are you not calling more Robert coverages? I'm Tyrann Mathieu. Like, let me off the lease. Let me go make a play." And so there is a little frustration on this defense. And, you know, that's kind of when you look back, oh, how do you go, you know, 7-10 instead of 9-8? It's these breakdowns throughout the course of the season.
So, Jeff, you got a player down there that we're familiar with, and we got one of yours. Love your impressions of Chase Young, the kind of season he's had. The expectations weren't through the roof like they were here, so it seems like he's been fine, but we'd love for you to tell us about him. And what should we expect with Marshawn Lattimore, who looks to make his debut, funnily enough, this weekend?
Yeah, what are the odds that you trade away Marshawn Lattimore in his first game in a New Jersey? He's in the building where he probably will have to be told where the visitor's locker room is. He probably doesn't even know where it is. He's going to have to go find it. But no, Chase has been, you know, he's been a good player. I don't think he's had the impact. I think if you ask some fans, they would say they were disappointed because they hear the name Chase Young and the number two overall pick, former rookie of the year, and they expect 10-plus sacks and just constantly be taking over games. He's been more just consistent, I think. He's come on lately. He just hasn't been putting up the sack numbers. He's been generating pressures all year. But if you look at last week's game, and Darren Rizzi said that he thought it was his best game of the year, I agree with him. He was living in the backfield. He just hasn't been able to finish off plays. And he also overrushes his rush lanes a little too often. And it creates some kind of backside scramble lanes. And I have a feeling we're going to see that a good bit this week is Chase Young getting in the backfield, Jaden making a miss, and then just nothing behind him. And it's been an issue for the Saints this year. But I think he's fit in well. You know, he's well-liked in the locker room. The question is going to be, hey, does he have a market? Because I think if the number is where the Saints want it, they'll gladly bring him back because I think they're happy with what he's done this year. As far as Marshawn, you know, it's interesting because is there animosity when a team trades you away to a situation where you're probably going to go to the playoffs and have a chance and have some realistic Super Bowl ambitions, maybe if whether it's this year or down the road with a young, talented quarterback. But regardless, you're going to have that kind of in the back of your head. Like, they traded me away. I'm going to show them why that was a mistake. I know that's kind of what he said today when he spoke to the media. But no, Marshawn is a great cover corner, a great man-to-man cover corner. He's not particularly great in zone. And when I've seen him have his biggest struggles, it's honestly been in matchups where the team he's going against doesn't have that, you know, top wide receiver one, because I think he gets bored. Now in this matchup, I don't think that's going to happen because he's got that, obviously that extra incentive. But that's what when you get frustrated with Marshawn, I can tell you this in advance, it's going to be, you're going up against a team that's undermanned at wide receiver. There's no Mike Evans or Jamar Chase or someone that he can really sink his teeth into in terms of a matchup. And you're like, oh, he'll lock this guy down. And then they'll go off. And you're like, what the heck happened? I thought this was a star cornerback. But no, he's a really good player, and you're going to get motivated, Marshawn, I think, the rest of the way.
What's your prediction for Sunday?
Oh, it's tough. I have a hard time seeing the Saints winning this game. I do think it's going to be closer than a lot of people are anticipating. I think it's going to be low scoring because the Saints are going to try to kill the clock. They're going to run the ball. I think the Commanders win. I think it's in the 20s. I'd say it's 24-14 or something like that. I don't think the Saints offense is going to be able to put up a ton of points. You know, it's going to be probably a field goal game for the Saints. And if they can kick field goals and stay in it, then that gives themselves a chance. But that would be my prediction, is Washington 24-14.
Jeff, thank you, buddy. Appreciate the time, man. Enjoy the weekend.
Sure, y'all. Thanks for having me.
Jeff Nowak, awesome insight on the Saints, helping us to scout the opponent on Grant and Danny. We would take that 10-point win that he just laid out. Lots to chew on there, though, and some things that we should circle back to. I actually want to talk about how well Chase Young played last week, and is that a problem as a mismatch maybe against the tackles Washington comes into this game with? Plus the idea that he did over-pursue a lot. He left those lanes that Jeff talked about. That's something that Jaden Daniels might take great advantage of. We'll dive into some of the keys for the Commanders' offense as we continue next on The Fan.
Hey, y'all, it's Chip Patterson from the Cover 3 Podcast, part of the CBS Sports Podcast Network. College football is about to enter its first ever 12-team playoff era, so join me, along with Tom Fornelli, Danny Cannell, and Bud Elliott, as we drop new episodes 5 times a week to close out the year. We've got reactions, bracket breakdowns, and best bets for these matchups with championship stakes. Follow and listen to the Cover 3 Podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Live from New Orleans in the French Quarter, Grant and Danny on the Fan, keeping you company until 6:30 on this Football Friday. Top of the hour, we should look around at some of the other top matchups and go through what should be a great weekend in the NFL. But we've had all eyes on the Saints and the Commanders. We came here to New Orleans to see the guys beat a bad Saints team. Jaden Daniels in Washington's offense going to have an opportunity to move the football in this game. This is the second to worst ranked defense in the NFL. Their previous head coach, Dennis Allen, that they fired was a defensive-minded head coach. Mm-hmm. And part of the reason he got fired was not just that the team was coming apart at the seams, it was the defensive regression. And some of the infighting's probably strong, but some of the issues with scheme that some of the veterans were having. Danny, there's not a worse team in the league at stopping the run. I look at this as a game where, coming off of what we saw against the Titans, one of the best run defenses in the league, Washington mauled them going into the bye, 267 net rushing yards. Brian Robinson basically put his feet up for the second half of the game. They gave him a little extra rest going into the bye week, went 16 for 100 essentially all in the first half with a touchdown. I think we're going to see 20 carries and over 100 yards for Brian Robinson. It would be his fourth 100-yard game of the year. I just don't really see a path to the Saints stopping Washington's running game.
The only hesitation I've got, and I've over-talked about this, is Dallas, right? That same thing where they couldn't stop the run. They had basically all but quit. They were a disaster on that side of the ball, and then Washington really struggled to run the football consistently.
B-Rob got hurt early in that game.
And he did. You're right, which is a fact. I mean, it just is. And, of course, Eckler then left late in that game as well after it was academic, but still they weren't able to run it effectively.
Robinson's first carry, actually, now that I think about it, of that game was when he got hurt. And
he came back in, but still wasn't right.
So he left the field. He came back in and was clearly not the same as what we had seen previously. Mm-hmm. And so he ended up 5 for 13, and then he didn't play in the second half of the game.
So my hope is that what they found or rediscovered or whatever verb you want to use against Tennessee, now it applies carrying forward. Because on paper, I agree with you. There is no disputing what you just said. It's an indisputable fact that New Orleans has scuffled, to be kind, against the run. And when Washington is right, they are going to smack you around in that aspect of the game, right? Whether that's Daniels on a keeper that keeps you honest, whether it's Robinson between the tackles thumping, whether it's Rodriguez kind of being that 1A in that regard, kind of how they distribute it. But what should happen here is New Orleans gets pushed around, Washington takes their will early on, then it's a who wants some fest. We're doing an Oprah Winfrey audience type deal, right, where everybody gets a chance to thump it on these guys. They struggle mightily to stop the run here. And you're hoping that they don't have something, they don't have any kind of special design, or you know, they take something away from Washington, maybe as Dallas did or didn't do. I have no idea who to give credit or blame to. Just simply saying, I saw that once on paper where I go, well, yeah, Dallas can't stop the run. There's no way they win this game because of that, and then we saw what happened. But on paper, you're 100% right.
It's crazy when you look at some of the yards that they've given up on the ground to teams that aren't that good at running the football, too.
Yeah.
They gave up 277 in a game to the Tampa Bay Bucks. 277. They gave up 225 to the Denver Broncos. Like, these are not the household rushing teams in the league. A little more respectable, but still not okay. They gave up 156 just a couple of weeks ago when they played the Rams. They gave up 181 to the Atlanta Falcons. That's Bijan Robinson, obviously, doing some heavy lifting with Algier out of the backfield. But 172 to Philly and Saquon Barkley. 139, I think that was before the Pacheco injury early this year, to the Chiefs.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, some really gaudy, ugly rushing totals against this defense. So I think it's twofold, really. I mean, Jaden Daniels being healthy and explosive again and being a runner again, he has not ripped anything big off, but the threat is back, and mm-hmm. we have seen that suddenness, that willingness to leave the pocket again, which was lacking for several weeks. With that now back and seeing him run the football 16 times the last two games against the Titans and the Cowboys, 23 times the last three games going back to at Philly. You know, you're looking at another eight, yeah, nine carries probably from him. If he's able to go run for 50 or so, it just opens everything up. What I've loved is early in the last couple games, they've had Jaden, I think by design, where Cliff either calls
something. Put in the defense's mind?
Yeah, yeah. Like, they either tell him, hey, like, this, you just call something that is not an option but a keeper, or you tell him, hey, let's keep one of these if you can, because I want them to think about this for the rest of the game. And as soon as he hits 6, 7, 8, 9, keeping it around the edge, now it's B-Rob time.
Mm-hmm.
Because you start to think about Daniels. You start to defend him, yeah, with a bear defender on the front, and now you're going basically, you know, 6-on-5 in the box or whatever it is. The other thing about the Titans game that you were talking about, it wasn't just that Robinson ran well. That's part of it. The 40-yard touchdown, untouched.
Yeah.
Crushed them. It, yeah, was Allegretti and Cosme and, like, the dudes in the middle, like Biotish. They were healthier, I would think, after the bye week even more so.
Mm-hmm.
They figured something out that I hope carries over.
Yes, you're wondering, again, the finer points. Someone like Logan Paulson could break it down. Or, you know, the leverage point was here, but now it's an extra half step that way, and that opened up this hole based on how teams are countering them. It's a level of sophistication that my, you know, little tiny pedestrian brain can never reach, but you're hoping that, again, that they found something, rediscovered something, whatever verb you want to use in that Titans game, a team with a much better pedigree and track record, at least to that part of the game, than this New Orleans Saints team when it comes to stopping the run. Tennessee has a good defensive front. They're not, you know, the 85 Bears, but they're good, and that was out of character for them, and Washington did it to them. You know what I mean? Like, you're hoping now that that's the personality going forward. If it is, changes your eye line a little bit. This is a great chance to kind of stamp that a little bit, right? Where you look then at the Dallas game as an aberration and not a sign of trouble. You know what I mean? If you run roughshod over a bad run defense, as you mentioned, the Broncos did, as the Tampa Bay Bucks did, for God's sakes, right? That running juggernaut, that mid-90s Nebraska team. But if you do that, you go, okay, Now we look at some of these outliers as just that and not signs of something to come.
This can be a little bit fluky, or luck sometimes can play into this, but they have not forced a fumble in three games. They also have not had a team fumble the ball in four of the last five games. Like, this is not a overly opportunistic defense. Sometimes you can find a defense that's terrible in terms of yards, but they're better in the red zone. They generate takeaways. And, like, you can still tell me, ah, well, yeah, they're going to give up a lot of yards, but they're going to make plays too. They don't make that many plays.
Yeah.
I mean, this really should be an opportunity for this offense. I keep coming back to this because I do think this is a big deal, so I'm a broken record. Off of a bye, you have spent an extra week preparing. Dan Quinn, in his press conference this week to kick off the week, talked about watching the Saints game on Sunday on his couch. Like, you have had all the time in the world to put in any prep that you wanted to. They should absolutely be able to move the football. I think they'll be able to run it. I like their chances as well with two corners out for the Saints, mm-hmm, to possibly be able to make some explosives down the field. The big question then becomes, other than Terry McLaurin, who helps you at wide receiver? Do we see K.J. Osborne, who they brought in this week? Does De'Ami Brown get an opportunity to be the second most targeted guy? Is it finally Luke McCaffrey's turn, or they drafted in the third round? There's got to be somebody else probably in this plan, mm-hmm, other than McLaurin and Ertz in the passing game.
Yeah, you don't know if Sinnott finally gets a chance here and there, or if you don't even have to, right? If you're running the ball so well, then maybe that's just what you end up doing. But to your point about turnovers, I think it's interesting, because overall the numbers don't look terrible for New Orleans. That's because they forced 7 in their first three games. Right? Since then, it's a
when
lot
they
of,
were playing with the lead.
Yeah, well,
they,
yeah,
were up big on teams, like, well, 40 to 10.
Remember, they scored 47 a game. But they've only forced 3 turnovers total over their last 6 games. That, as they've kind of started to swoon and play worse. A couple of those are wins, by the way, but even still, just it ain't the same as it was. I mean, nothing's the same like those first 2 weeks of the year where they were the best team in the NFL, probably, scoring 100 points or whatever and only giving up 15 per game. But yeah, that option, I think, to me is more important, quite frankly. Now, again, you could end up in a dogfight every week. You never know. See the Giants 2 times this year for Washington, where a bad team that's going to maybe pick first overall, Washington beats them by a score in each one of those games, where you've got to find that option and somebody's got to go make a play. But in a game like Carolina or Arizona or Tennessee this past week, second receiver could be you or me, honestly, and you're still winning that football game. To me, that question is more for, in general, when they're playing a really good football team, but I'd like to find out who that's going to be before we get to crunch time in the fourth quarter on a 3rd and 5 and Terry's doubled. You know what I mean? I'd like to know who my 3rd down war daddy is.
Another key for me is on red zone situations where the Saints, it's the only thing they've done well this year pretty much, is they've forced teams to kick field goals at one of the highest rates in the league. They're eighth best in the red zone defensively. Again, that's despite being 31st best overall and dead last in rushing, which is kind of interesting. But this is an all-year-long thing, not just a recent trend thing. They do allow teams to move the ball, and then a lot of times they'll force you to kick a field goal. The last time Washington played, they missed both of their field goal attempts with the same guy that they have doubled down on, Zane Gonzalez.
Oh, yeah.
Now, you could tell me it was a bad game, and it probably I know it was a bad
game. I'll say that. I'll agree to that.
My question is it going – like he hadn't kicked in the league for 3 years before he got this recent opportunity, right? So how sure are we for a bounce back? I mean, they had to sign a kicker to the practice squad this week. They just did that this morning because Zane Gonzalez missed enough practice time that they were worried about him because he has this issue with his left plant foot. Now, someone smarter than me could say, hey, man, they said it's not a problem. True, they also said Austin Seibert wasn't a problem, and then he came back healthy, and he kicked and struggled so badly that they had to go out the next week and put him on injured reserve and bring someone else back. So forgive my skepticism a little bit here with, is the kicker healthy? Why are they signing a guy on Friday? I don't have a great feeling about this.
Mm-hmm.
Good news is it's indoors, it's on carpet, so there shouldn't be an easier situation in the world for an NFL kicker than this one. Bad news is I do think they're going to kick 2, 3, 4 field goals in this game maybe, the way the Saints play defense, and I need you to hit them when you kick them.
Yeah, and that's the way to stay in the game, right? I mean, you think about a basketball team, the anatomy of an upset, March Madness style or whatever. One team, the better team, misses free throws, gets a little bit tight. Well, if you come up, you know, take a drive and end up with no points on the board, you sort of mess around and let the other team stay in the game. I mean, that's what happened against Dallas. It's what happened, you know, against Philadelphia multiple times where you go and you're ended up with nothing. You're winning, but they're too good to hang around. You let a team that's ready to quit give them reasons not to? That's a recipe for disaster, and we've already seen that once.
Grant and Danny, with you on the Fan, we are live in New Orleans. Next, we'll get into what we feel best about, what we're most nervous about with this Commanders matchup with the Saints on Sunday. You can also hop in and give us your answers on that at 800-636-1067. That's 800-636-1067. Why do you feel good about the matchup, and what, if anything, gives you pause about Sunday? Washington needs it. Chance to get to 9-5. And pull away just a bit from the Rams in the wild card hunt. You're listening to The Fan. Grant and Danny welcoming you back live from New Orleans in the French Quarter. We're hanging out at Hotel Monteleon. How about the decision made by Ryan Clary today that may well have changed this trip completely? So he woke up wanting to go get some beignets right after he got his workout in.
Mm-hmm.
And he had asked last night, where should I get beignets? And Christian told him, go to Café Du Monde.
Yeah, so this is the world-famous place, right? There's a couple beignets. There are beignets a lot of places. But this is the place that is the most known for it worldwide.
Yes.
That I went last time, that I begged you to go with me, and you told me to take it and shove it in the worst place possible, kick all the rocks, and explode and die. And Ryan and I were, this is a plan. We were going to go do this morning.
So he was told, go to Café Du Monde. Mm-hmm. That's where the best beignets are. Now, because Ryan doesn't actually ever take any advice and, like, put it into action, he just asks questions of what he should do, and then he does the opposite.
Yeah.
So luckily, he treats Christian with the same respect he treats us with, which is nice.
It's good to know it's not just us.
He decided that he knew better than the guy that lives in New Orleans and runs every restaurant in the French Quarter.
That's worth running.
And so, right, exactly. And so he said, I tell you what, we'll just do the other one that you told us is also fine, but you should go to this one. So he went to Café Beignet, which is closer to the hotel.
Yeah.
This time, and only this time, was Clary's Gen Z nature, where he just disrespects any, like, the annoying part is he seeks out the advice. It's not like we went up to him and we're like, Clary, you got to go to Café Du Monde. He says to Christian, hey, where should I get my beignets tomorrow morning? He says, oh, clearly, it's this place. And Ryan's like, okay, let me make sure not to go there. It's like asking if he, you know, what right. movie should I see, now, Danny?
That's actually a great point, Grant, before we get to you, Ryan.
Yeah.
It's when I see my children, you're doing something incorrect. Like, for example, you're wearing shorts, 38 degrees right now outside. Like, you're going to be cold. I'm coming in as the parent giving you the advice. You're not asking me what should I wear. You're doing the wrong thing. I'm trying to correct it.
And
it's more insulting to ask and then say, you know, there's this one finger. It's right in the middle.
So I'm cognizant of the fact. I think about this kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. Clary's the youngest, and he gets beaten up on a little bit for that reason. Mm-hmm. And so I don't want to feel like he's on a trip. He's having a good time. He's got his girlfriend with him. I don't want this to be everybody makes fun of the young guy and the young guy and the nagging the young guy. Oh, Mr. Young Guy.
Young guy.
You're going to have an alcoholic beverage.
Young guy.
I was the young guy on trip.
Sure.
I don't want to be annoying to him. Right. The annoying part, though, is, and this is not just a trip thing, in general, when he goes, hey, Grant, give me a movie to watch. And I'm like, are you sure? And he's like, yeah, I'll watch whatever it is. Just give me a movie. And I name a movie. And then he actively avoids it for months on end.
He's like, I watched Herbie's Halloween.
Just don't ask.
Hubie's Halloween. It's Hubie's Halloween.
I'll let you know when I'm interested.
Just don't ask me. Like, I won't even be upset. I'm not going to go to you and pretend to be old guy telling young guy something.
Right.
So anyway, he asks the expert. He asks our show leader. Our show host for the weekend, where should I go? And he goes to the opposite place. But this time, and only this time, was his young Gen Z rudeness the perfect beneficiary to him. Because Café Du Monde abruptly closed today after, I believe, the ceiling caved in.
The roof caved in.
Mm-hmm. Fire trucks were there. Police crews were at the scene. I'm looking at a news story. Iconic New Orleans beignet restaurant among businesses closed after partial roof collapse.
The collapsing of the
roof. And also, let me just say this. My intentions were to go to Café Du Monde. Now, I did not go because it's only cash only, and I don't have cash. I have $5, all $1 bills.
There's no ATMs anywhere?
I mean, I'm sure I could have found one, but I was like, you know, I was trying to get things done and walk around New Orleans real quick, and I could have gone there, but I didn't have cash.
But
and that just would have been another step into what I wanted to do. And you know, I'm very precise with how I do things.
Very precise.
I think you guys
precision
know.
Is what I think
but
of.
Yes.
Here's my all I'm asking is, why do you ask?
Well, no, because I wanted to know, but then he said, he was like, hey, like, it is cash only, by the way. And I was like, oh, well, I don't have cash. I asked the girlfriend if she has cash. She does not have cash. So,
But in your mind at that point, he says, like, you wanted beignets. That was your goal.
I wanted beignets.
He says, this is the place to go. To you, it's not worth it to just walk across the street or stop on your way there, like, in a walking into anywhere and just go to an ATM. That was not worth it.
It would have been, but even then, like, time. I have to get places. I have to do things. This is a work trip after all. Work
busy
becomes
guy.
I'm a busy guy. And then tomorrow I was like, we'll just go to Café Du Monde tomorrow. Of course now I can't because the roof collapsed.
You'll never go.
But that was literally my plan.
I do find it interesting though. So you like the time was the issue.
Yes,
you didn't
for
have
me.
Enough time.
It's a longer walk. It's 400 feet to Café Beignet, and Café Du Monde is like a half mile walk.
You went to your room twice to change before the show. Like, what a waste of time that is.
Well, yes, I know. I didn't know I was going to be sweating. I was sweating my butt off.
And then you put a sweatshirt on.
Yeah, and he's got a
point.
Now you're...
Well, it's no, because this one breathes more than the other jacket. I promise you on that. It breathes more. You just don't know it.
I'm just saying, like, time was never an issue.
Yes, it was. For me, it was. I wanted to make sure I was here, and even then, I was still late. For at least me. I don't know. I got here, like, 12:20, I think. I thought I was
1:20.
1:20. No, well, no, 12:20 Central time.
Right. But I'm saying for the people listening.
Yes, 1:20 their time.
But there's no like assigned time that you have to be here.
No, I know. We're all like enjoying. You know, we have our shirts off and everything. We're doing our thing. But still,
we have our shirts off.
We do.
Yeah,
we could.
That's a good visual.
But still, I was trying to do what was right.
Can
I didn't
I
want
let the
to take
listening
too
audience
much time.
Know I don't have my shirt off right now.
Fair. It's a great point. We don't have YouTube right now. But still, we
Grant, why's your shirt off?
We have a job to do. And that was at the forefront of my mind at that moment. That's why I didn't go to Café Du Monde today. I was going to go tomorrow.
Company guy. I see.
Company guy. Mm. See, I'm a company guy.
Prioritizing the radio program.
See?
There
we go. Look at this.
So you don't think this is in any way feeding from the same issue where anything that you ask us what you should do.
Yeah, the same Zoomer I know best
and
mentality.
We say, whatever the answer is, you never do it.
Okay, a little bit of that. Just because I wanted to try this place that is literally called Café Beignet. It's called Café Beignet, man.
Right.
I have to go try the beignet.
Guy from New Orleans,
yeah, but why?
I know, who knows all the stuff about New Orleans, said, this is where you go for the best beignets. And you go,
This name's better. So you're wrong.
I mean, it's 400 feet away, and it's called Cafe Beignet. And let me just say, I had a great beignet this morning.
It was very good.
It was a really – I brought you guys beignets. And also,
in fairness,
let me throw this in.
Beignets are going to be good wherever you go.
Sure. That's
fair. That's
fried dough with the powdered sugar.
And also, winning off the field here, the guy in front of me, he bought me free beignets today.
Why
he was just like, hey, you want beignets? And I was like, yeah. And he just bought us some beignets. And so that's what I brought here for you guys. And you guys all
so sweet.
Had some beignets.
Well, and we appreciate that. So I guess the what we need to circle back to, though, is you got free beignets.
Yep.
And the roof didn't cave in on you.
And the roof didn't cave in
that's
on you.
That's a big day.
So
big day.
Therefore,
I
you
won.
Are.
Winning off the field.
Yeah. And you call this time.
I got it.
Gen Z, I know better. Knew better.
I knew better.
You were on to something.
I knew better.
Look
Grant and Danny on the Fan. We'll spin you around the NFL ahead of week 15, and we'll make our final Commander Saints predictions live from New Orleans in the French Quarter next.